it's the second quarter of their first preseason game, but it might already be Daniel Jones season in Indianapolis. Oh my God. Just scrolling through Twitter during the break, and I see a clip of the Ravens-Colts game, and I can't, who even is that? Olajuwon? I'm trying to see who that is for the Ravens. Guy comes off the edge screaming, completely unblocked. David Ojabo. He is a fourth-year D-end outside linebacker for the Ravens. He's 25 years old out of the University of Michigan. He comes screaming off the edge and obliterates Anthony Richardson. He only threw three passes in the entire game. Leaves. And so now it's Daniel Jones getting the go-ahead in Indianapolis. I don't know what the long-term ramifications of that are going to be. I just saw the clip and saw Anthony Richardson get mowed over.
That offensive line and running back is treating him like Adam Sandler from The Longest Yard. Just anybody come get him.
It's an interesting little running back battle, though, in Indianapolis. The two main backs going in this game for Indy so far, former University of Iowa running back Tyler Goodson. Shout out to a Hawkeye there with T. Good. The other is fifth-round draft pick out of Kansas State University in DJ Giddens. I know there were a lot of Chiefs fans who were hopeful that that Kansas City would take a flyer on a running back like DJ Giddens. They ended up going for Breshard Smith out of SMU in the seventh. But it looks like those two guys are getting the bulk of the carries right now. Giddens, four carries for 12 yards so far in this one. Tyler Warren has three catches for 40 yards so far. He is a first-year tight end out of Penn State. Colts took him with the 14th overall pick. Adonai Mitchell has two catches for 37 yards. He's out of Texas. I believe he might have started his career at USC. But so far in the game, it is the Ravens 14 and the Colts 6, despite the fact that both quarterbacks for the Ravens have thrown picks in this game. Ravens quarterbacks are a combined 2 for 6 for 8 yards and 2 picks. And yet the Ravens are up 8 because of Keaton Mitchell, 9 carries for 68 yards. In other news, as the Royals get set to play the Twins tomorrow, I want to draw everybody's attention because the guy is just making his major league debut. Luke Kuechel of the Minnesota Twins, so far, dog. Saw this stat earlier today that Twins rookie Luke Kuechel, Kuechel's kind of a utility guy. He plays a lot of second base and shortstop, but he's also a capable third baseman, has become the first player in Major League Baseball history to have 6 extra base hits, 8 RBIs, 5 stolen bases, and 5 walks before their 10th career game. Kuechel, in 9 games in Minnesota, is hitting .393 with a .514 on base percentage. The guy has 11 hits in 28 ABs. He's scored 5 runs. He's hit 5 doubles. He's got a home run. He's driven in 8. He's stolen 5 bases. He has got caught stealing just once. 5 walks to only 2 strikeouts. And he doesn't turn 23 for another week. He turns 23 a week from tomorrow. He is a former second round pick of the Twins. They took him in 2023 out of Arizona State. Luke Kuechel is making some noise early in his major league career. So if you're looking forward to watching that Royals Twins series coming up here starting tomorrow, I'd keep an eye out for a guy like Luke Kuechel. All right, I'm going to change gears for a second because for the majority of the week, I have been filling in over on KMBZ. That is our sister station there. It's our news station that we have here at Odyssey Kansas City. I've been producing the afternoon show over there, Dana and Parks. Very, very popular show here in the Kansas City market. And I've been filling in for their producer, Sam Stevie, who's been up in the Upper Peninsula on vacation this week in like the Michigan area. And on Monday, Dana starts talking about this series on Netflix that she's watching, and she has this thing that she says when she watches a movie or a TV show or a series that she really enjoys. She says, run, don't walk, to go watch this particular thing. And she was talking about the Trainwreck series on Netflix. Have you heard anything about this, Jacob? So it's a series on Netflix that it's documentary style that goes through all of these major events that the world has seen over the years. And there's quite a few of them. I mean, just going through the list, they have so many. The ones that we've watched so far, we watched Trainwreck, Balloon Boy. You might be too young to even remember that, Jacob. This was 2007, 2008. Was when Obama was running for office. So I was like 9, 10, 11 years old. Don't tell me how old you were, Jacob. Don't do it.
I was 5 in 2006.
Cool. Yeah, that's fine. That's fun for everybody. I remember it. It was when Obama was running for office. So I believe it was like 07, 08, somewhere in there. But there was this family out in Colorado who built like a flying saucer. They basically built a UFO. And it was supposed to be tied to these little like stanchions, and it came undone, and it flies up into the air, and it was a mother and father and their three boys. And the youngest boy was a little bit of a troublemaker, I guess. And one of the older boys, thought that their brother was inside the flying saucer. So the thing comes off the stanchions and ends up flying thousands of feet. Like, experts were saying this thing was like 10, 12,000 feet in the air. And it flew miles and miles. And so the family's freaking out and all these things are happening. They think there's a child inside this flying saucer. National media picks it up. The only reason I remember that it was around the time that Obama was running for office was because he was doing a town hall on CNN, and they cut away from it to do live coverage of this flying saucer going through the air because they thought there was a 6, 7-year-old boy inside of it. So the thing eventually lands. Nobody's inside the flying saucer. Turns out there was a little attic, like crawl space inside the garage, and the child had crawled inside of it and fallen asleep. So an investigation ensues, and they accuse the mother and father of creating a hoax, of saying that their kid was inside it when they knew he wasn't, to try to get media attention, because I guess this family had been on the very popular reality show Wife Swap. Do you remember Wife Swap at all from your childhood, Jacob?
Very, very vaguely.
They were on an episode of that, and so there was like people that were making, you know, creating rumors of, oh, they're trying to get a reality TV show. The father in the show is crazy. Like, certifiably insane. The mother is an immigrant from Asia and didn't speak tremendous English. So there was a lot of back and forth, right? The dad was crazy. There were certain elements to it that made you very, very questionable of the father in that situation. I walked away from it very questionable over him and the family, but also questioning the police a lot in that situation, because like when they first called it in, authorities arrived at the home and police officers, law enforcement law enforcement did a thorough sweep of the home three times and never found the child. Until eventually the kid woke up and walked into the living room where everybody was at and was like, why is everybody freaking out? Why is everybody crying? Mom, I'm hungry. And so then the police start this investigation, the same police that searched the home three times and couldn't find this kid, and eventually try to create this thing, and they're coaxing confessions, and they make the family plead guilty by threatening to deport the mother if she was convicted of a felony. So in order to avoid that, the father pled guilty so that the mother would only get charged with a misdemeanor and therefore wouldn't be thrown out of the United States. The whole thing felt slimy by everybody in the situation. So we watched that, and then we watched Trainwreck, The Real Project X, which I always thought that that came out, that The Real Project X thing came out before the movie, and then they like based the movie on it. I was wrong. So this was in the Netherlands somewhere, this tiny little town of like Heron in the Netherlands, that this girl put on Facebook that she was having a 16th birthday party, which in the Netherlands, 16 is the drinking age. So she puts it up on Facebook and made it a public event instead of a private event. So she invited like 75 people. By the end of it, over 350,000 people were invited to her birthday party on Facebook because other people just started inviting other people. She deleted her page. Somebody else made another one. He eventually deleted his page, and another group of people made another one. And they all like converged on this neighborhood in this tiny town of like 15,000 people in the Netherlands, and all hell broke loose. Cars were lit on fire. There was fights with police. Businesses were broken into. It was insane. And then last night, and this is where I'm getting to, my wife and I watched Trainwreck Astroworld. Now, Jacob, I know you're old enough to remember the Astroworld tragedy because this was only 3 or 4 years ago. 4 years ago. It was back in 2021, right? Right coming out of the COVID-19 pandemic. Travis Scott, very popular hip-hop artist, had a concert in Houston, right outside of Houston, literally right outside of NRG Stadium where the Texans play. And it was a disaster. People died. I believe 10 or 11 people died, to be exact, at this Astroworld concert from asphyxiation. They were quite literally crushed to death at this concert. And you walk away from it, nobody was ever reprimanded at all. The concert promoters, which was Live Nation, put the concert together. They put together a venue with a capacity of 35,000 people. They sold over 50,000 tickets. The gates were busted down because they had minimal security for the event. So well over 50,000 people ended up at this event, which was only created for a capacity of 35,000. You watch the documentary and there are text messages back and forth between high-level individuals at Live Nation talking about, we have to shut this down. Like, people are going to die, and they didn't. And nobody was charged. I'm telling, like, the Astroworld one is the craziest one I've watched by far so far. Like, people should have gone to prison for that. It was gross. But you got to watch these things, dude. They are captivating as hell. I mean, there's, like I said, we've watched so far Balloon Boy, Project, The Real Project X, and then we watched Astroworld. There's also a Trainwreck of Woodstock 1999, which is a 3-episode one. There's,
wasn't alive for that.
Nope, I was one. So there's Trainwreck Storm Area 51, if you remember that. That was back during the COVID-19 pandemic.
The viral meme
that started on Twitter, or not on Twitter, on TikTok. The other one we watched was Trainwreck Poop Cruise of the carnival cruise ship that lost power and the toilets were connected to electricity. So the toilets didn't work. So people ended up pooping into bags and peeing in the showers, and then they overflowed. Like, they started to get towed back to shore and the ship shifted and it caused literal excrement it was coming down the walls. It was in the hallways. People were sleeping outside on cots. They were building like shanty towns on this cruise ship. It's a horrendous documentary. And you walk away from it thinking, I'm never getting on a cruise ever. I'm already not going to, cause I get motion sickness. I get seasick really bad, but my wife wants to go on a cruise someday. And I'm like, see, never doing it. So that's a good one. There is a Trainwreck Mayor of Mayhem, which is about the mayor of Toronto, the former mayor of Toronto, who was caught in a scandal after video footage surfaced of him, Stephen A. Smith voice, smoking crack. Craziest part? He was not removed from office for it. There's some good ones on there. There's PI Moms, which is a team of soccer moms who ended up going down and like revealing a drug scandal. There's some crazy ones. The Cult of American Apparel, which I haven't seen yet. But these, dude, these train wreck things are insane. And you walk away from it feeling slightly angry in certain situations, but more often than not, feeling incredibly intelligent. Like, man, I do some dumb things, but I don't do anything that dumb. Like storm Area 51. You're an idiot. 913-586-7965 is our number. Carter Frala says, you guys kick ass. Well, thank you, Carter. Appreciate that. That comes from the text line. You're listening to After Hours here on 96.5 The Fan, Logan Weber alongside Jacob Mustard. We're going to turn it back around. We're going to get back onto the topic of sports when we come back. This is 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports. Well, this is a wild stat for everybody to hear about. Just saw this on Twitter as well. Yes, I know it's technically called X. I won't call it that. I never will. Cry about it. Clayton Kershaw and Max Scherzer are the probable pitchers tomorrow night as the Los Angeles Dodgers are set to take on the Toronto Blue Jays. It will be only the second time that those two will have faced off against one another in their big league careers. These are two guys that have been pitching in Major League Baseball since 2008. For his career, Clayton Kershaw, 217 wins, 96 losses across 442 starts. Max Scherzer is 218 and 113 over 465 starts. Second time, that these two guys are going to go head to head in a starting pitching game matchup in an MLB game in their careers. The first time they did, September 7th, 2008, their rookie seasons. So you're telling me two of the best pitchers of the last 20 years of Major League Baseball, they've only matched up against each other once. Tomorrow night makes twice. That's insane. I mean, if you think about the last 20 years of Major League Baseball, right? Let's say 2005 to now, who are the top three pitchers of that era? Obviously, Kershaw is one of them, right? I mean... he's an MVP, an 11-time All-Star. He's won three Cy Young Awards. He's been a five-time ERA title champion. He's got the Triple Crown under his belt. He's won a Gold Glove. He's won a World Series. He's got a Clemente Award. The next guy is probably Justin Verlander. And then the third guy is Max Scherzer, who, to his own credit, he's got two World Series rings, he's been to eight All-Star games, and he's got three Cy Young Awards. Two of the three best pitchers of the last 20 years of Major League Baseball. This will be the second time they're going head-to-head in a game. Wild to me. Taking a look at some other baseball news. Of course, earlier this week, big news out of the Boston area during that series against the Royals. On top of the fact that they won two out of three, they also signed standout rookie Roman Anthony to an eight-year, $130 million deal. Honestly, good on him, right? It's very similar to what the Royals did a few seasons ago with Bobby Witt Jr. They signed him to that massive deal to keep him around for the long haul and to avoid the arbitration hearings and all those sorts of things. If you think he's going to be a cornerstone piece of your roster for years and years and years to come, it makes sense to put a guy on a big-time deal to avoid any and all turmoil that you could possibly undertake, because those arbitration hearings can certainly be a deterrent to a long-term deal for a player. Once you're sitting there in a courtroom and one side is trying to justify how much they deserve to get paid and the other side is trying to justify that they don't deserve to get paid that much, relationships can splinter very quickly. But with that in mind, we're already seeing some interesting calls. Let's just put it. I've seen multiple news stories today, and I've seen people on social media saying, should the Kansas City Royals consider doing the same with Noah Cameron? And I'm not super convinced. Now, I mean, I'm not trying to say anything negative about Noah Cameron, because there's not much, if anything, to say negatively about Noah Cameron this season. The guy has been phenomenal. He's a St. Joe, Missouri kid. You know, he grew up in the area. He's so far this year been outstanding. He's got a 2.68 ERA across 15 starts. He's 5-5 with an ERA plus of 152. He's been awesome. But he's 26 years old, a former 7th-round pick of the Royals back in 2021 out of UCA, Central Arkansas. If you're looking for a deal anywhere near anything similar to what Roman Anthony just got, right? 8 years, $130 million. Mind you, Roman Anthony is 21 years old. So by the time that 8-year deal concludes, he'll be 29, 30. If you were to give Noah Cameron anywhere near that 8 years, he'd be 34 years old when that deal came to a close. Could Noah Cameron still be an incredibly effective pitcher at 34? Sure. Who's to say he won't be? That just feels like a big leap to make for a guy like that. For a guy like Bobby Witt Jr., absolutely it makes sense. But I don't think Noah Cameron falls under that same long-term superstar sort of quality that a player like a Bobby Witt Jr. or even a Roman Anthony classifies as. Staying along those lines with Royals pitching, we've got an update on Cole Reagans. It sounds like the long toss is going well so far. And according to Ann Rogers of MLB.com, he is getting increasingly close, as in possibly by next week, being put on the mound for bullpen sessions. That, if everything goes well over the next few days. So the hope remains that the Royals could theoretically see Cole Reagans before the season comes to an end. But I have an incredibly important question to throw out here. If he's healthy, healthy enough, as we approach the end of August and even early September, do you even call him up if you're the Kansas City Royals? I mean, it's a legitimate question that I pose. You're 57-58 right now. And if we're going through the hypothetical gambit here, right? I mentioned earlier that the Royals' schedule here over the next 13 games looks really, really good. They've got 3 against Minnesota on the road, a Minnesota team that is, you know, 6 games below 500. You then come home for a 3-game set against the Nationals, who are struggling, 3 games at home against the White Sox, who are struggling, and then you've got 4 at home against the Texas Rangers. a Rangers team that is four games above 500, but dealt off quite a few pieces at the deadline. If this Royals team were to go, say, 10-3 over the next 13 games, that puts you at 67-61. If at that point, as you get set for a three-game series on the road against Detroit August 22nd, if you're in the wild, man, I don't know. I look at how injury-prone Cole Reagans has been, and I can't wrap my brain around the possibility of throwing him out there before he's 100% ready and risking his 2026 season. Because I think the Royals have a better chance to contend next year in 2026 than they even have this year. Like, even if the Royals do make the postseason this year, and never say never, nothing's impossible, obviously. We've seen it quite a bit. We saw the Rangers and Diamondbacks go from wild card berths to the World Series. We saw the Royals go from a wild card berth to the World Series in 2014. It is plausible, albeit not all that possible. I still think even if this Royals team wins 86 or 88 games and sneaks into a wild card spot, I don't think you can beat the Tigers in a seven-game series. I don't think you can beat the Yankees in a seven-game series. I'm not sure you can beat the Red Sox or the Blue Jays in a seven-game series. And how about the way that the Astros have been playing over the course of the last month or so, although they've only won four of their last 10? I don't know, man. I'm not sure that I can get behind the risk-reward possibility surrounding Cole Reagans. Maybe that's just me. 913-586-7965 is our number. Oh, dear God. This from an 816. Former Mizzou basketball player Sophie Cunningham is returning to play in Phoenix on Amazon Prime at 9 p.m. The WNBA has now instituted a no-bag policy. Yeah, I heard about this. After the epidemic seemingly beginning to sweep the league, odds on the color of the potential object flying onto the court are posted. Green is the heavy favorite. Go, Sophie. That from Raj in the Ozarks. Come on, Raj. Listen. Let's not go full degenerate here if we can avoid it, okay? It's an epidemic sweeping the league, and I, for one, think it should stop. Like, the first one was kind of funny. But after that, you're just a copycat, and it's not funny anymore.
Well, and didn't somebody already get arrested?
I believe either a second or third person has now been arrested today. And, like, they're facing legitimate charges.
Oh, I mean, it's similar. One of them threw it in the same vein as running onto the field.
One of them threw it and accidentally hit somebody. That's technically assault. Don't be stupid. It's not that funny. Regardless, we got a few more messages in the text line that I want to take a look at. Here on After Hours, Logan Weber alongside producer Jacob Mustard. Stick around. We're with you till 9 o'clock tonight. Again, reminder that Jordan Foote is coming on at 8:30 to talk a little Kansas City Chiefs football. So stick around for that here on 96.5 The Fan. After Hours here on 96.5 The Fan. Logan Weber here with you, hosting the program tonight until 9 o'clock. Jacob Mustard behind the glass producing the show, doing a great job as always. Here's an interesting story. I will just report what happened, and you can decide for yourselves whether it's good or bad, something that you celebrate or applaud or not. The San Francisco 49ers have released cornerback Eli Apple. Yes, if you're wondering, that is the same Eli Apple who has been a longtime corner in the league. He was drafted by the New York Giants. He ended up getting traded to the Saints, played for the Carolina Panthers, but he is perhaps most well known for the 2 years that he spent with the Cincinnati Bengals in 2021 and 2022. He was a longtime tormentor of the Kansas City Chiefs. He talked a lot of trash. He was one of the people who popularized the phrase Burrowhead at a certain point and drew much chagrin from Chiefs fans. He played for the Los Angeles Chargers last year, and by played, I mean he played in four games and registered a combined two tackles and one pass deflection. He did not start any of those games. No interceptions, no forced fumbles, fumble recoveries. Over the course of the last two seasons, he's been in professional football. He's played in 14 games between the Dolphins and the Chargers, starting four of those games, picking up a total of 48 tackles, 39 of them solo tackles, with one interception and 10 pass deflections. He ain't going to stick around much longer. He signed a one-year deal this offseason with the Niners, but then the Niners signed another player to a one-year deal today, needed to free up roster space, and Eli Apple was the odd man out. So it sounds like a guy that Chiefs fans don't think incredibly highly of will be looking for a new job. Not ideal. Trying to track something down here. I had a listener a little while ago talking about a player, I think it may have been in reference to Cole Reagans, who was dealing with, who's of course dealing with an injury. He's trying to come back. Something about an elbow injury and like screws coming apart. Just trying to locate what that is. This is a completely separate entity here. That's the no bag policy that we were discussing earlier. As I'm going through here, goodness, this URL is incredibly long. Regardless, we were talking earlier about Cole Reagans and about the latest report that I have came from Ann Rogers of MLB.com, who had said that Reagans is doing well with the long toss. He's up over 120 feet, I believe, and that if all goes well over the next few days, that he could soon begin bullpen sessions and Reagans could return to the field or to the Royals before the end of the 2025 season. And I asked, should he? And I don't know what the correct answer is, right? I mean, I see it both ways, right? Somebody else, I got another 816 in the text line who says that refers to Reagans as found money. Royals got him basically for free because they sent him to the Rangers for Aroldis Chapman as sort of like an end of the year rental. Reagans was a hot commodity. He was a great prospect with the Rangers, but dealt with injuries, including a Tommy John, you know, two Tommy John surgeries at that. Goes on to say that he's going to get hurt again eventually. Might as well go for it while we have the pitching to do it. Do we really believe that the Royals have the pitching to... I mean, I think the better question is, what is your definition of do it in this scenario? By doing it, is that making the postseason? Or is it actually competing, getting to, and or winning a World Series? Right? What is the exact clinical definition in your view of might as well go for it while we have the pitching to do it? Because I think if it's make the postseason, I think the Royals could do that without Cole Reagans. I do. With the way that Noah Cameron and Michael Wacha and Seth Lugo are pitching, I like the idea of those three guys in a seven-game series. And if you want to, you know, have a game where you throw a Lorenzen or you throw one of these new arms that the Royals have added. We didn't have the pitching, and somebody else points out that we didn't have great pitching in 2015, but we made it happen. Yeah, because you had great hitting. This Royals team doesn't have great hitting. So I don't know. I'm not super bought into the idea of potentially risking Cole Reagans into further injury, which could possibly... I don't know. You could make him susceptible to injury and risk even a portion of 2026. 913-586-7965 is our number. Another person says, if he can go, go for it. Never know what Lugo and Waka will be like next year. Teams will compete with what will be just as good next year. They're going to make the playoffs, maybe bring him out of the pen. That 2015 bullpen was the best ever. Yeah, that was another part of it, right? The starting pitching wasn't outstanding, but all they had to do was get through six innings. And then here, Herrera, Davis, Holland, please shut the door for us. Okay. I'm sure we can do that. Logan Weber here hosting tonight's program alongside Jacob Mustard. You're listening to After Hours on 96.5 The Fan. Listen, last week I was talking with the producer who was doing the program with me, Jackson Ogden, about College Football 26. Because I bought the game, but I hadn't played it yet. Well, I've now played it, and I have things to say. We'll discuss that next here on 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports. I'm going to hold off on a final review until we get patches in the game and things start to get sorted. But my initial thoughts, my initial reaction to having over the past week finally played College Football 26, because last Thursday or last Wednesday, I had a conversation with Jackson Ogden, who was producing the show, about the video game, because he'd played it and I had downloaded it, but I hadn't played the game yet. And I just to get his thoughts and the thoughts of our listeners about what they thought of it. So I took those, played the game myself for a little while. It's bad. So far, it's bad. I mean, listen. I'm one of those people that, and I know there's going to be people in the text line that say, you know, you're just bad at the football game. I'm not. From the time I was 8 years old playing NCAA football 06 or 05 or 06, whatever, I always played on the highest difficulty. I always played college football games on Heisman difficulty. I would typically play Madden on like All Pro instead of on Hall of Fame, but I always played college football on Heisman difficulty. And to the credit of the new video games with College Football 25 and 26, Heisman is incredible. Is increasingly more difficult than it used to be. Like, you would play NCAA Football 14 on Heisman, and you would beat a 95 overall team by 60. Like, it was just, there was just no contest. So I'm playing on Heisman difficulty with me and my best friend are playing together, which that's another part of the subject that I'll get to. First game of the year, we thought it would be funny because of my ties and the time that I spent in Springfield at the radio stations I was at down there, that, you know, hey, let's play Missouri State for our first game of the year, College Football 26. We're playing on Heisman difficulty, and we're both pretty good at the game. Start of the fourth quarter, Jacob, we are trailing the Missouri State Bears out of Conference USA, 13-0. We end up winning the game because of two touchdowns and a safety, 15-13. We went for two when we got up 15-13 to try to make it a 17-13 game to prevent a field goal from sending the game to overtime. We didn't convert. We ended up winning the game anyway. 15-13 against Missouri State. We're playing with Iowa, which is not a barn burner. They're not a powerhouse of a program, as much as I would hope, as much as I want them to be as a fan. They're still an 82 overall, and Missouri State's like a 60. I was sacked 6 times. You can't run a play action on this damn video game. Because, I mean, you literally, I mean, run the play action, you know, play action rollout to the right. And you're just trying to hit the tight end on a 4-yard crossing pattern. And there's a lineman in your face a second after the ball is snapped. Every single time you drop back to pass. And I'm sitting there watching it, playing this game, and I'm like, they didn't fix any of the bugs in College Football 25, because that was a major problem with last year's game, was you couldn't run play action. It was impossible to do unless you were out of the shotgun formation. You can't run play action out from under center, which, if you know anything about Iowa football, under center is basically the whole offense. I'm sitting there. Iowa's got 2 offensive linemen that are 90-plus overalls who on regular plays will just not touch a soul. It's bad, man. Like, College Football 25 was a good video game. I enjoyed it. College Football 26 is a joke. And hopefully they fix it. They recently released like the notes behind the latest patch that's coming out, and it's supposed to fix pass protection and a few other things in the game. I'll wait and see it. Not to mention, in that same game against 61 overall Missouri State, Bears threw for over 300 yards on me. Just carved my secondary apart. With like 4 guys in the secondary that were like 82 plus overalls, including a 90 or 2 spattered in there. And I'm getting torched by Missouri State's offense. The next game, we played Iowa State on the road in Ames, and I lost on a game-winning field goal. I doinked off the left upright. 47-yarder to win it in hostile territory. Doinked it right off the left upright. I was heartbroken, man. It's not a good game. And then the thing is, you go and you play on All-American mode and you win a game by 65. Like, we played West Virginia the next game. We're playing on All-American because we decided to change it. Beat them 73-13. What are we doing? It's a video game, bro. It's all a joke. It ain't real. I understand it's a video game. What does that change here? It ain't real? Yes, I'm aware that it isn't real. But I'm trying to play the game, and I'm trying to have a good time, and I'm trying to be competitive, but I would also like the game to have a little bit of realism included in it. Isn't that something that EA is always advertising, is the realism within their game? Not sure how real it is to let Missouri State throw for 300-plus on my defense and win by 3 points. 2 points, for that matter. Press reset like all y'all do in your life. Sounds like a skill issue. Knew that was coming. Just a matter of time. Skill issue? Fine. Come over here to the studio. I'll dog walk you. Guaranteed. 913-586-7965 is our number on After Hours here on 96.5 The Fan. Jordan Foote's coming up at 8:30. We're going to talk some Kansas City Chiefs football coming up. A few news and notes surrounding the Kansas City Chiefs in regards to the preseason and in regards to practice today that I'm going to run down with you in the final 60 minutes of our show tonight here on 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports.